come free. I'm an American soldier, an American. Beside my brothers and my sisters, I will proudly take the stand.
All right, good morning to you once again. It's Dave Plyler for Steve Cochran on 720 WGN. Memorial Day is a day we honor and pay tribute to the many brave generations who have fallen serving our country. Now, there's a clear difference between Memorial Day and Veterans Day. However, I also want to take this opportunity to discuss how we are taking care of our veterans and their families who have sacrificed so much to keep us free. And to join us to share those activities happening in Washington today and new initiatives that are in place to take care of our veterans is the Honorable Robert Wilkie. He's U.S. Secretary of Veterans Affairs, who oversees the nation's largest integrated healthcare system with 1,250 facilities serving more than 9 million enrolled veterans. Good morning to you, sir.
Good morning, Dave, and thank you for having me.
Thank you for being here. You are an Air Force Reserve Colonel. The VA has been near and dear to your heart for a very long time.
Yes, sir.
And your father served in Vietnam, and when he came home after his second tour, it is something you remembered when you accepted this opportunity to work for the VA.
Yes, I did on a couple of levels. My father was a big man for his day. About 6'2", 240, which in 1970 is large. Today, it's not even a quarterback, but then it was. And he was terribly wounded in the invasion of Cambodia, spent a year recovering in an army hospital, and he came back to us weighing about half of what he did when he left. And only the good graces of a great soldier, Creighton Abrams, who became chief of staff of the army, General Abrams said this officer will be allowed 3 years to recover, and he eventually did recover, but went back as a senior officer in the 82nd Airborne Division, but was not even allowed to wear his uniform off post because of the hostility of the times.
Right.
And that was on my mind when the president asked me to do this. I was the Undersecretary of Defense at the time. And those memories stuck with me, as did memories of going with my great-grandfather and grandfather to VA facilities in the South during my childhood. But that image of warriors being taken care of but not being welcome stuck with me and was certainly on my mind when I came to this position.
You mentioned your great-grandfather as well. He also impressed on you that cost paid by Americans across the country. Yeah,
he did. He took me to my first battlefield, and I was five. And then the second one was six. And he pointed to me the cost of conflict. In this case, it was the Civil War, the Battle of Shiloh, which was the first great, great battle of that war. And he said something interesting. I think he stole it from his friend Shelby Foote, that he often imagined Lincoln and Davis sitting there reading sheet after sheet of the casualty lists from that battle and wondering what they had gotten themselves into. And the statistics that I use, we've had 41 million Americans serve in uniform since the first shots were fired at Lexington, and about 1 million have given their lives. And I will say I tend to get upset when people talk about things like the greatest generation. Having been part of this military world my entire life, there's not much difference between a youngster who's in Afghanistan and a youngster like my wife's grandfather, who was 17 years old, marching up the Champs-Élysées into the Battle of the Meuse-Argonne, which was the most terrible of battles. And they all come from the same places. They all have the same fears. And they have performed magnificently as and awed the world with their service.
Well, and your own family as well. As you said, your father was an Army artillery commander prior to joining the Air Force. You served in the United States Navy Reserve with the Joint Forces Intelligence Command, Naval Special Warfare Group, and the Office of Naval Intelligence during the George W. Bush administration. Yeah, you served both Robert Gates and Donald Rumsfeld as Assistant Secretary of Defense, Special Assistant to the President for National Security Affairs, and a Senior Director for National Security Council under Dr. Condoleezza Rice.
Yes, sir.
This isn't your first rodeo.
No, this isn't. And those people that you named, and I would put Jim Mattis in there as well, I've learned from all of them. I've learned from the perspectives that they all had. Dr. Rice, the academic who had the long view of relations with Russia and China. Dr. Gates, who was the professional intelligence analyst, one of Chicago's own, Donald Rumsfeld. I probably learned the most from him because he was the most experienced. I first met him as a child when he was Secretary of Defense the first time. And Rumsfeld had the perspective of serving multiple presidents, serving in the House, being ambassador to NATO, and amongst all the other things that he did. And I watched him work the bureaucracy. And that was probably the most fascinating time of my career.
And now with the VA, you know, this department has seen its share of controversy over the years. So it really provided you with a platform to make some significant changes on how the VA operates.
Yes. And I will say this about the president. I'm a pretty good historian and have been accused of being that by members of the Senate. And there's been no president in the post-World War II era who has talked about veterans as much as this president has. I mean, you go to any of his rallies, he talks about it, first as a candidate, now as president. And he has backed that up by giving me incredible leeway to initiate basic reforms that will turn this place into a modern 21st century healthcare administration. We're testing many of these things out in Chicago, particularly when it comes to something that is basic as the modernization of our supply chain. So you don't read any more stories about doctors running across the parking lot to a private hospital to get equipment that they should have had to begin with.
Absolutely.
Testing that out in Chicago. We're testing out the electronic health record in the Pacific Northwest. Since you mentioned my father, I don't want any more soldiers walking around in their lives with 800-page paper records. So what we'll be doing is building a record from the moment that young American walks into the military entrance processing station. And then in addition to that, the legislation that the president signed on mission, which finally recognizes and supports financially the families who take care of those who served in Southeast Asia. I mentioned when we started the discussion, I still can see the orders and the effects of soldiers, effects on soldiers who are not allowed to wear their uniforms off post. And this is Fort Bragg in southeastern North Carolina. This is in Berkeley, California, Massachusetts.
Right.
And I remember those times, and I hope we never see them again.
Well, we are talking to the Honorable Robert Wilkie, Secretary of the Department of Veterans Affairs, and there's more with him next on 720 WGN.
And I won't forget the men who died, who gave that life to me, and I gladly stay.
State Player on 720 WGN. We're talking to the U.S. Secretary for the Department of Veterans Affairs, Robert Wilkie. Secretary Wilkie, May is Mental Health Month, and roughly 20 veterans commit suicide a day, about 70% of those veterans, which is surprising to me, were not regular users of VA services. One is too many. What programs are we doing to help these veterans and reduce the number to zero?
Well, Dave, let me break down those numbers even more. You're correct that 70% of them have no contact with VA. Half of those, that 20, have never been deployed. So I shoot back at people who say that this is a consequence of constant rotation in and out of Iraq and Afghanistan. The problems are much deeper than that. But the 20, one a day is on active duty, two to three or four are guardsmen and reservists, most of whom have never deployed. and 14 of that 2014 we've never had contact with. If you look at the number of suicides that have occurred on our VA facilities, there's nothing that ties them together. Last month in Cleveland, a veteran took his life because he did not want to live with the prospect of disfiguring surgery, surgery that would have removed an eye, removed part of his jaw and his vocal cords. And he came to VA, sadly took his life, and left us a note asking us to take care of his mother, who had been caring for him. You mentioned the biggest issue. If I just focus on the sad end, the sad act of taking one's life, then I think we're doing an injustice to the issue. We haven't even begun to get our arms around mental health in this country. We're not even at the Sputnik stage when it comes to that. The President's National Task Force on Suicide Prevention, which I lead, is looking at the entire range of issues: opioid addiction, homelessness, mental health, financial instability. And I do think that there is a deeper issue, and that is we need to have a national conversation. The last time I testified for Congress, which was about 2 weeks ago, and the day I testified, New York Times ran a massive piece about the incredible spike in teen suicides in the aftermath of a Netflix show called 13 Reasons Why.
Right. Yeah.
It was a 30% spike. And veterans are the most visible part of this, but we need a national conversation on life and mental health.
Well, and there's another issue here, too, is obviously some of these veterans and people in general who are in that situation and are in such a dark place.
Right.
Cannot help themselves. They are not going to make the phone call. They are not going to reach out. And I know you have resources for family and friends to get involved to help them get the assistance that they need.
Well, I think I have to fall back on some of the programs that I worked on with General Mattis. We have an all-volunteer force. We are not in the state that we were in the 1960s and 70s, where you really didn't have to pay a great deal of attention to the well-being and future well-being of those in uniform, because there was always tens of thousands coming through the pipeline to replace them.
Mm-hmm.
This is a different day. We have a limited number of Americans who are eligible for military service, and those who are eligible, we have to take better care of. So the issue of mental health education now begins when those youngsters hit boot camp, and it spreads throughout their career. For VA, everyone who comes to us receives a mental health screening, and since October, we have screened 900,000 veterans. About 3,000 of those we are constantly monitoring, because they have given us indications that they may want to harm themselves. So we do profiles on everyone who comes in now. We also have same-day mental health services in all of our facilities. And I would argue that suicide prevention is really America's business. And we at VA have, I think we've gotten off to a better start in terms of providing a whole of government and a whole health approach to this.
Now, I want to mention this, too. There's a Veterans Crisis Line, and we'll put it on our website as well. It's 1-800-273-8255.
That's 855, yes.
800-273-8255, and you can press 1 or text 838-255. That's 838-255. And there's trained professionals available also at veteranscrisisline.net. Yeah.
Dave, let me tell you, we get about 1,700 calls a day at that crisis line. About 100 of those calls require our immediate action. And I can say that we have saved lives because of this, but anyone in your audience who wants to talk to us, please reach those, get those numbers and call us. I would also say that in terms of changing attitudes, we take care of those who have been discharged in an other than honorable circumstance. We have contacted 500,000 service members who were discharged in an other than honorable adjudication, and reached out to them and asked them to come to us, because many of those cases, those individuals suffered a traumatic brain injury. And we have given them notice that because of that, we want to help. That is a change in the culture, because in the old days, if you had an other than honorable discharge, you were shown the door, and that was the last contact that the military had with you.
Right.
We don't want to ever see a return to the dark days of the 1970s and late 60s, when America forgot that it had sent its young people over the ocean to fight in Southeast Asia, and then did not welcome them when they came home. We as a people will be in a very dark place if we ever allow that to happen again. And it is a special honor for me to participate in those services. And I'll say one other thing, and I think General Eisenhower stole this line from George Orwell as to what it means to be a veteran. And he said that you exist, you soldiers exist, to remind your fellow citizens why they sleep soundly at night. And I can think of no better way to describe our mission than we remind our fellow Americans that they sleep soundly at night because of the sacrifices of their fellow citizens.
The Honorable Robert Wilkie, U.S. Secretary of Veterans Affairs, I truly appreciate your time on this Memorial Day, sir.
Well, I thank you. I thank you for everything you do, and I will look forward to seeing you when I'm in Chicago.
Sounds terrific. Thanks again, sir.
All right. Yes, sir.
Gary Meyer live in studio after a look at your morning traffic.